Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Misdirection is a fundamental tool of magic intended to distract an audience's attention away from what is real. It's a form of deception in the service of entertainment. But what if misdirection happens on a larger scale, say, for a whole community, a city, a country, or for everyone? And if so, what might the perpetrators be trying to hide, and why? In this month's story, we return to the True North, a colony ship on a multi-generational voyage to find out. Greta, a devoted auditor, discovers something odd about a survey mission, but when she reports it to her superiors, their reaction is not what she expects, and Greta soon finds herself turning for help to the most unlikely person on board the hollowed-out asteroid. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 87, The Audit, Planetfall. Somewhere and sometime, despite what you've been told, you might want to trust what you can see with your own eyes. Captain Soren Hollander quietly walked onto the bridge, hoping to catch a few of the crew off guard. Despite constant surveillance, there was always trouble fermenting, and a surprise entrance was sometimes the only way to catch it. He stood for almost a minute listening to the chatter before the officer of the watch noticed him standing at the back of the compartment.
"Captain on the bridge,"
the shaken officer nervously announced.
"Thank you, Lieutenant,"
Soren coolly acknowledged, then took his seat, sensing the tension on the bridge increase. It was the way he liked things. Keep them in the dark and anxious. Say nothing. Let them worry about what you might have overheard, he reminded himself. Soren had just been reappointed for his third term. All the previous captains had come from the families of executive officers, but Soren was an outsider. His father, the head of an onboard corporation, had not been part of the ship's executive class, and that had proved to be an advantage, which helped him to outmaneuver the fossils of the old order. From a very young age, the senior Hollander had taught him the importance of shipboard commerce, and more to the point, where the money flowed from and to whom it went, and it was this latter piece of knowledge that helped Soren get to the top. Soren and his father had always been opposed to the centralized control of shipboard commerce and the loose attitude toward the ever-annoying social clubs that had flourished after launch, which were full of whining malcontents as far as Soren was concerned. While his contemporaries had wasted their time with distractions like clubs, he had learned everything he could about the flow of money on the ship. Eventually, Soren joined a group of wealthy business interests and became its leader. Then, after a strategic anonymous leak had caused a bribery scandal among the executive officers, Soren had stepped up to run for the captaincy, with a promise to clean up the corruption at the top. The scandal split the crew and inhabitants into four groups, one backing the first officer, one the chief astrogator, one the former captain's daughter, and one behind Soren. Soren's supporters, at just over a third of the ship's population, had carried the day. And so, for the first time since the launch of the True North, over 63 years ago, a civilian was put in control of the colony ship. It had been 9 years now, Soren reflected, and during that time he had worked hard to slowly change the social fabric of the True North. But with Planetfall only a few months away, there was still an overwhelming amount of things to be done. Soren nodded his approval at the officer of the watch, then got up and left the bridge. Functionaries saluted as he walked down the corridor to the captain's great room. He enjoyed the formalities of the office, the salutes, the yes sirs, the accommodation that everyone on the True North afforded him, out of fear or respect, he didn't care which, as long as everyone did what he needed them to do. Soren stopped at a door, with a golden boss symbol on it of a compass pointing to the star Polaris, ringed by the Latin words Verum Aquilonum, or the True North. He laid his hand on the access plate and the door slid silently open. Captain Hollander, a gray-haired older man, dressed in a subtly expensive business suit, seated at the conference table, beckoned Soren in.
"I'm busy, Neville. I hope this meeting's important,"
Sorn absent-mindedly brushed some unseen lint off a chair opposite the man and sat down. Neville waited for the door to close, then slid a sheet of smart paper across the table. Neville Warren had been Soren's father's private aide and fell into the role with the younger man when Hollander Sr. had retired. He was loyal, well-connected, and discreet. Neville provided the means that Soren and his father sometimes needed to get things done quietly. "It's a report on that security breach a couple of weeks back, sir." Neville motioned to the sheet of smart paper. "That group of amateur stargazers who were causing us grief by sending the chief astrogator and the bridge crew messages? Well, the chief auditor shut them down for using donated funds for political activities under the new rules you imposed for charitable social clubs. They figured out the ship's orbiting an empty point in space. Thankfully, they don't know why, but their meddling caused someone in maintenance to begin to check the navigation system. I promoted the woman involved to an administrative position where she can't do anything to hurt us, and we slapped a gag order on the members of that irritating group. But there's still a risk that someone else might figure it out. You just need to look at the stars long enough."
"Neville, I'm disappointed. That's simple to solve. Close the viewing blister, call it a safety issue. After all, it's the only place for direct observation of the outside. Then set up a computer-generated feed of the star fields and make it available on the shipnet for free. Most people will be too distracted by the soap opera of their little lives to notice the difference." Neville made a note on another piece of smart paper.
"As an added precaution, sir, we defunded the stellar cartography unit before the course change started, claimed the credits were needed for planetfall preparation."
"And they bought it?" Soren questioned.
"Of course, they weren't happy. But they all knew that the need for their services was going to end soon. They've been reassigned to keep them busy."
"And what about navigation?"
"We faked the sensor readings to make it look like we have to go around an interstellar dust cloud. That'll account for the extra time to planetfall. All the instrument feeds to the bridge have been adjusted. Everything checks out. Even the artificial intelligences won't notice."
"Still, the stargazers. That was an ugly oversight." Soren noted, glaring accusingly at Neville. "You realize that we have to hold this position for several more weeks. I'm counting on you to make sure there's no more slip-ups."
Greta Humboldt, Auditor First Class, worked through the numbers for the umpteenth time, trying to find where she or the manifest system had made the mistake. But there simply wasn't one.
"This doesn't make sense,"
she muttered to herself, then saved the summary to a file and sent it to Chief Auditor Ivanov, with a note requesting a meeting. Feeling a stress headache coming on, Greta decided to take a break. A half hour later, she found herself wandering aimlessly through the halls near the outer shell of the hollowed-out asteroid. On an impulse, she decided to visit the observation blister, hoping that the quiet solitude of the stars would help her unwind. She hadn't been back to the blister since the audit she'd performed on the Stargazing Social Club, and for once there wasn't a lineup when she rounded the corner, and it soon became apparent why. There was a sign hastily taped to its hatch. "Due to safety concerns, this facility has been closed until further notice. For your pleasure, a remote feed has been set up in the recreation areas, or you can view it online. Sorry for the inconvenience." Greta was disappointed, but decided that a remote view would be better than nothing. She checked the closest recreation room, and finding it empty, turned down the lights, sunk into a lounge chair, then called up the exterior feed. The wall in front of her disappeared, replaced by a vista of bright pinpoints beyond the rocky hull. The starfield seemed somehow different, but she was too distracted to care and pushed the thought aside as she tried to force her aching brain to unwind. By the time Greta arrived back at her desk, feeling only moderately better, she found a message from the chief auditor on her screen. She barely had time to pull her files together and rushed to his office.
"Ah, Miss Humboldt, thank you for coming. Please take a seat. I've been reading your report."
Chief Auditor Ivanov was strategically seated behind a desk. his thin, elongated torso protruding above its glossy surface, making his head and hands seem disproportionately large. To Greta, he looked like a caricature of an alien from an ancient movie. She shook the image from her mind and sat down, which forced her to look up at the auditor.
"You've done great work since joining the department, Miss Humboldt, and up to now your analysis has always been flawless."
"Thank you, sir,"
Greta cautiously replied, suspecting he was implying that her perfect record had ended.
"Normally, I would never question one of your reports, but this one, well, I fear that you're just overthinking the situation."
"With all due respect, sir, I disagree,"
Greta began to object.
"Look, I've seen it before. A new, enthusiastic auditor, working so hard to prove herself that she begins to see connections where there are none. I checked with the launch bay. They were doing upgrades at the time. It was just an instrument error. There's nothing here. You need to take some time off."
Greta sat for a moment, unsure of what to say. She was the most thorough person in the department and had never made a mistake.
"I don't understand, sir. I checked the maintenance logs myself. It was the first thing I did. The system upgrades were completed 2 weeks before."
The chief auditor gave her a diminutive smirk. "Okay, you've caught us. I'll let you in on a little secret. The launch bay maintenance engineer is the first officer's nephew, and he was going through some personal issues at the time, which I can't get into. It's a private matter, you see. We needed to keep it as quiet as possible. After all, the upgrades were eventually completed. They just took longer than the records say. The systems were being worked on at the time of the survey ship launch, but the maintenance logs won't show that. It was such a small thing, just an improperly calibrated sensor, we didn't feel it was appropriate to blemish his record. So our office is going to drop this now." Ivanov laughed. "I should have known that we couldn't hide this from the likes of you."
Not convinced, Greta tried to argue.
"But the launch weight of the ship was under by exactly half the weight of the fuel. Not 49 or 51 or 51.5%, exactly half. And all the other items on the manifest are accounted for. I checked the calculations at least 10 times. There's not enough fuel on board the survey mission to make it back. They'll all die out there, sir."
Auditor Ivana frowned.
"I'm not sure you heard what I just said, Miss Humboldt. The sensors were not calibrated. I can assure you that there is no problem with the fuel. I'll make sure the departing weight record is changed to reflect that. Now, about your time off. I've authorized an extra 4 weeks. It starts at the end of today, and I'd strongly advise you to take it. After all, we need everyone at their best at planetfall."
"But..."
Greta started to object. "Don't worry about your unfinished cases. I've already assigned them to another auditor. Have a good vacation. You deserve it. Now go. I've got work to do." And with that, he motioned for her to leave.
Greta rolled the conversation around in her mind. It was not the way she had expected the chief auditor to behave. When she arrived back at her desk, she immediately pulled up the ship's directory and called the shift manager at the launch bay.
"Auditor!"
The face of a startled middle-aged man, dressed in a well-worn staff suit, appeared on the screen.
"Such a nice surprise,"
he stammered.
"Is there something wrong with our reports?" "No, Mr. Handa,"
Greta responded distractedly.
"Your reports are fine."
The man appeared to relax a bit.
"I've just got a couple of questions, but they're not about your records. Were you on shift when the survey mission launched 6 months ago?"
"Yes, I was. Why?"
Concern grew across his face again.
"Were there any system upgrades being done at the time?" "Of course not,"
the man said defensively.
"We'd never do something like that. It's too dangerous. Thank you for your time."
Greta tried to give the man a reassuring smile, then broke the connection before she had to answer any awkward questions. A note popped up on her screen. It was a confirmation of her holiday leave. She leaned back into her seat, trying to make sense of things. There was something wrong. People's lives could be at stake, yet the chief auditor had treated it like a rounding error. She decided she had no choice, opened a new window, and began to compose a message to the captain. Greta was waiting at a tube station on her way back to her cabin when a familiar face scuttled across the platform.
"Mr. Bob,"
she called out. Hale Bopp had been the president of the Stargazers Amateur Astronomy Social Club, which had been shut down by one of her audits, an apparently inconsequential case that had somehow brought her to the attention of the chief auditor and resulted in her promotion. The man turned and glared at her, then hurried off the platform. It wasn't Bopp, and even if it had been, she wouldn't blame him for trying to avoid her. She thought about the messages he and his club had sent to the bridge crew. He wouldn't even tell her what was in them. Instead, he had taken her to the observation blister, then cryptically marked a spot on the glass and told her to watch two stars, one behind the spot and one to its side. When she had gone back a few days later and looked, it appeared that the star to the side was moving around the center, and that could only happen if the true north was traveling in a circle. She knew that couldn't be right, but had surreptitiously checked the ship's course anyway. And with the excitement of her promotion to auditor first class, Greta had put the discrepancy aside. Only once since then had she brought the issue up with her new boss, Ivanov. He'd explained that the true north's course took them near a binary star system with a short period orbit. And initially she had been satisfied with the explanation, but now she wasn't so sure. Although it was late by the time Greta arrived back at her cabin, she found she wasn't tired. So instead of trying to sleep, she pulled a smart sheet from her valise, sat down, and placed her thumb on the corner to log in. The paper pulsed slightly in acknowledgement, then showed the general index page. Annoyed, Greta navigated to the auditor's net and tried to log in again. The display patiently informed her that she was in holidays and politely refused her access. Greta threw the sheet on the floor in disgust and dug into her valise again, this time finding a sheet containing the Stargazer's audit. She leaned back in her chair and reread the file. The pop and candy machines that framed Hale Bopp's door on Deck 1 now had graffiti spray-painted across their displays in sprawling angry letters proclaiming the evils of processed food. Living between the only vending machines on a deck known for its health food advocacy seemed like a bad choice on Bopp's part. With reservations, Greta approached the door and placed her hand on the call icon. She had to buzz several times before a pair of impatient feet stomped up on the other side. "Go away," Bopp demanded acidly through the speaker set into the wall. "I followed all the rules. I haven't said anything. Now go."
"Mr. Bopp, I'm not here on ship's business. I can understand why you wouldn't want to talk to me, but I think you're the only person who would believe me. Please, I have a question about binary stars."
"Sirius A and B?" Bopp questioned, the hard tone in his voice beginning to waver.
"That's what they told me, but I have my doubts."
The door suddenly slid open. Greta didn't recognize the man that emerged into the light, squinting. He had put on an unhealthy amount of weight, and what there was of his thinning hair was tangled and unkempt. His clothes were rumpled and in need of a washing.
"Please excuse me. I wasn't really expecting anyone. I work from home now and don't get out that often."
He looked nervously up and down the hall. Seeing no one, he gestured for her to enter. Hale led her down a dim hall to the living area. It seemed smaller and shabbier than the last time Greta had been there. He hastily picked up several empty pizza boxes labeled organic, vegetarian, non-gluten from the floor, throwing them into a large pile in the corner.
"Well, at least the pizza place on Deck 3 is still supporting me. They'll put anything into one of those boxes and deliver it. But I think the neighbors are catching on. You saw the graffiti on the way in?"
"I did,"
Greta admitted.
"The prosecutors didn't give me much choice, you see. I could keep my job if I worked from home. Guess they didn't really want me talking to other people."
"Oh, I'm sorry to hear that."
"Well, you should be. You didn't believe us, did you? Even if you did, I suppose it wouldn't have made any difference. You were just looking at how our money was being spent. But I thought if I showed you, you'd understand why we had something to say."
His voice trailed off. "They convinced me that..."
Let me guess, he laughed, that you're only seeing Sirius A and B rotating around each other. Well, let me tell you, there's a couple of problems with that idea, Miss Humboldt. First, the orbital period of Sirius B is 50 years, so you wouldn't be able to notice it move in a few days. And second, we're nowhere near the Sirius system.
Hale collapsed into a well-worn, cat-haired-covered beanbag chair and motioned for Greta to do the same. Instead, she chose a kitchen stool that wasn't already occupied by an empty pizza box and gingerly sat down.
So I guess you finally figured out that we're only trying to point out a navigational problem to the crew and came back to apologize. He suggested sarcastically.
Not really. But I'm not sure what I think anymore either, Mr. Bopp.
Greta sighed.
I was doing an audit of the launch bay and noticed that the departure tonnage of our survey mission was too light. It was down by exactly half the weight of the fuel needed to reach Galiza. My supervisor brushed it off as a measurement error caused by some maintenance being done during the launch window. Then I was ordered to drop the case and take a holiday. Of course, I checked with the manager. Nothing was being worked on when they launched the ship. On the manifest, they were supposed to have enough fuel for an 8-month trip, but they appear to have only left with enough for 4. Can you tell me how far away we are from Galiza, Mr. Bopp? That's what I came here to ask.
Only the official location. I haven't seen the real stars in weeks, but...
Hale stopped as if he were considering something, then reached under his chair and pulled out a beat-up-looking star chart. He quickly spread it out on the worn shag carpet, found Galiza, then moved his finger along an invisible line.
A paper chart?
Greta said in disbelief.
How quaint.
Okay, it's simple, but it works. No power needed, and the best part is, its data can't be changed. An inheritance, Hale explained. Handed down through the family. It was a gift, a kind of good luck charm that would keep us from getting lost.
And it's how I got interested in astronomy. If, as you say, the survey mission was supposed to take 8 months, and it was launched about 12 weeks ago, that would mean we should be somewhere about here.
He pointed a nail-bitten finger at an empty spot near a hand-drawn cross-eyed face, then noted the adjacent stars, and saw that Greta was looking at the drawing.
Don't mind that. I used to doodle on this map when I was a kid, Hale mumbled, embarrassed.
Then stiffly got up and walked over to an overflowing garbage pail and pulled an old smart sheet from under a pile of debris that had spilled out onto the floor. He thumbed it on, flipping through pictures, then stopped and handed the sheet to Greta.
That's the last picture I took from the observation blister. Look at the stars.
Greta stared, but didn't understand.
Don't you see it? They're the wrong ones. I don't know why I didn't figure this out before.
Hale grabbed the smart sheet back and compared it to the star chart. Then he dragged his finger along the brittle paper surface toward Galiza until he had almost touched it.
This point would give us the star field in my photo, Miss Humboldt. I think we're only a few hundred AUs from Galiza instead of thousands. Only weeks away, not months.
He switched the smart sheet to the live outside feed.
See? He excitedly exclaimed. The feed's showing the wrong stars.
That's why the survey ship only had half the fuel, isn't it? We're almost at Galiza.
Greta muttered angrily.
And they're trying to hide it.
I may know a way to expose this lie. My grandfather told me about an old exterior camera that was used during ship construction. And some of the Stargazer members work for the company that runs ShipNet. Last time I checked, that camera was still working.
Soren watched the exterior video feed, his face red with anger.
How could this have happened? When was it switched? He yelled.
Embarrassed, Neville looked down at a sheet of smart paper lying in front of him on the conference table to avoid Soren's accusing stare.
We're not exactly sure, sir.
How can you not be sure?
Well, it's hard to tell one star field from another, sir. To the untrained eye, the change wasn't that obvious. We took it down as soon as we found out.
You mean as soon as our astrogators pointed out the discrepancy?
Soren angrily corrected.
And we immediately blamed it on a few disgruntled members of the stargazing social club that we disbanded. We said that they were trying to make trouble because we had caught them spending donated funds on activities unrelated to their charter. And the best thing is, the story is only a slight variation of the truth. It'll hold up to scrutiny. And besides, not very much damage was done, really. Most people think the Stargazer's feed was a fake.
Neville tried to sound convincing.
We've been encouraging that.
Most?
Soren growled.
We have several bridge crew who are questioning things now, and we can't start throwing them out of the airlocks. Although, if we could, I know two people I'd promote to the front of the line.
Soren pointedly stared at Neville and Ivanov, so we'll have to appeal to their greed to keep quiet. And that will come out of both of your shares. Unfortunately, our two truth-seekers may require more.
Hey, I had nothing to do with this, Ivanov protested.
Well, that auditor worked for you, didn't she? And who came up with a lame explanation about the instrument error?
The captain settled back into his seat and calmed himself down.
Okay, let's get this over. Bring them in.
The door to the captain's great room slid open. Hale and Greta were pushed through by two large security guards who immediately turned and left to resume their posts outside.
Soren said nothing, letting the two stew for a while before gesturing for them to sit down on two uncomfortable-looking plastic chairs that had been placed at one end of the conference table.
So, you two think we're closer to Gliese than we've been telling the crew and the colonists,
Soren stated rhetorically.
But why?
Greta began to demand. Soren's glare made her stop.
I aspired to the captaincy because I wanted to change things on the True North.
Soren sighed.
We were coming to the end of our voyage, and what had become the culture on this ship would have become the culture on our new world. There were a few of us who didn't want that, didn't want committees populated by the weak who lacked vision to hold back the real leaders like myself and my backers. Taking control of the captaincy was only the first step. We needed to ensure our position would be maintained after planetfall. And the best way to do that is to gain economic control over key resources on our new world. But we needed advanced access to the comprehensive planetary survey, so the right people would end up with exclusive rights to strategic resources, key minerals, water, that kind of thing. And the rest, well, they can squabble over the leftovers. As you figured out, we're currently traveling in a circle not that far from our destination. The survey team has already reached Gliese C and sent back the advanced report. We'll have them send a public one, minus the resources we'll control, in a few weeks to coincide with their official arrival at the planet. I have to admit that I'm impressed with the initiative that the two of you have shown in discovering our benevolent plan. So much so that I'm inviting you to join our little group. You'll both be handsomely rewarded.
Soren smiled predatorily at Nevin and Ivanov.
And given important positions in the new planetary administration, my assistants here will make and pay for all the necessary arrangements. And before you ask, you don't have a choice.
Greta took a break from her screen to massage her aching temples. She looked out the window of the dome over the bleak frozen landscape of the small moon. Gliese C was only a thin crescent on the horizon.
Hale, how are the robots doing in the North Mine?
She yelled. They had been given important jobs as promised, managing the off-world mines, and a healthy percentage of the profits, which they could spend in 20 years or so, when the next shuttle came to pick them up.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 87, The Odd at Planetfall. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes, or Stitcher Radio, or check us out in Google+ and Facebook. We'd like to thank a listener whose comments on Google+ motivated the writing of a second part to this story. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. We release a new story every month, approximately between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Make Sure Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written and read by Ellen V. Hare. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Make Sure Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.